The last time we met, we talked about that of thought, you know, and this one, the French priest who studied in a period of 7 years over some 3,000 people came to him or were brought to him for possession. And of those 3,000, four were possessed. There's never been a study of the sin. There's never been a demon census.
For good reason.
or census of those possessed. The one thing that is apparent, though, is that that there are periods in history when demon activity is stronger than others.
Which Doug's supposed to point it out.
What?
He doesn't think it's funny.
What's going on?
I don't know.
Remember when Doug
said, well, why was it?
Because Jesus was here, there was more demons?
Oh, that's right.
He put it together?
What was the answer to the question?
Doug asked the question, why were there more demons around when Jesus was there?
Long pause.
And after we just gotten through studying the whole night, the idea that the only time demon activity is really threatened is when you begin to walk in the Spirit.
Uh-huh.
And so he answers his own question because Jesus was there. It's one of the brilliant. Now, there's some the symptoms that there's one universal symptom of demon possession, but that in itself doesn't mean there's possession.
What are you looking at Pete for?
And that. The universal symptom that must be there in order for there to be possession is the baby crying. No. Is spontaneous combustion. No. The symptom is the revulsion at the symbols or at the name of Jesus of Nazareth. There's something that's inexplicable, and that it's not just the name of Jesus, because we got, you know, Jesus is all over. It's the name of Jesus of Nazareth. It's not even the name of Jesus Christ, because some falsely claim to be the Christ or have the Christ consciousness. But the revulsion is at the name of Jesus of Nazareth or the Nazarene. And it's anyway, that in itself, that has to be there, but that has to be coupled with other physical phenomena.
You know, the reason for that is because it's a particular point in history when, you know, like, you know, Jesus Christ is come in the flesh, that original incarnation, and somehow they don't like that.
Right.
That's strange. Why not Jesus, the risen Messiah?
No, it would seem that his entrance into time and space would be the biggest offense.
Well,
There's something odd here.
Let me go to Luke. Let's go to Luke 4. Let's look at another version of it. Go to Mark 1. verse 21.
Mark 1:21.
Right. And when they went out into Capernaum, he had just called the four fishermen to be his disciples in this scenario. And they went out, they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day he entered into the synagogue and taught. And they were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one that had authority, and not as the scribes. And there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, saying, Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God. And Jesus rebuked him, saying, Hold thy peace, and come out of him. And when the unclean spirit had torn him, and cried with a loud voice, he came out of him. And they all were amazed, insomuch as they questioned among themselves, saying, What thing is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority commanded he even the unclean spirits, and they do obey him. And immediately his fame spread abroad throughout all the region round about Galilee. Now, one of the reasons they weren't astounded because there was an exorcism. They were astounded because there was an exorcism without ritual.
They responded to his voice also.
To his word. Now, again, what have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? They didn't call him Jesus the Christ, although they recognized that he was the Christ, because that's what the Holy One of God, the Holy One of God means, is the Christ, the Anointed One, the singular, the only. We'll probably get to it here in a little bit when we start talking more and more about this idea of place, but somehow, and it's important, because this isn't in our consciousness, that we don't normally think or speak in terms of Jesus of Nazareth. We, because of our culture, tend to, if not believe it, assume it by our way we speak about him, that Christ was his last name.
Brother was Frank.
Yeah. Christ wasn't his last name. They had no last names. He was in Hebrew terminology, he was Jesus bar Joseph. But somehow Jesus of Nazareth became an important element in this equation of place and authority and exorcism. Now, some of the symptoms that are tied to this revulsion at that name, and it's like John has been pointing out, that the law portion, i.e. the ritual, is a shadow, and the law has some efficacy. So there is ritual exorcism even among pagans, and so here, this isn't anything that's black or white. This isn't something that's discerned by the senses. That's why I'm sure that we will be confronted with this, because this is part of priest training. It tends to clarify your theology very quickly. So anyway, so the revulsion, there is revulsion at holy water. I mean, there is revulsion at water that's been blessed. There is revulsion at the symbol of the cross. There is revulsion at buildings where the Holy One of God is worshipped. But the main revulsion is at the word or the name or the command of Jesus of Nazareth. And you will talk about Jesus Christ. In fact, in the rituals of the Catholic Church, there's many times when the words Jesus Christ are used and the signs of the cross are used. But something in the initial stages of determining symptomology or whether or not there is possession, there is a revulsion at the name of Jesus of Nazareth. Now, it's coupled with one or more, or these are just a partial listing. But one of them is apparent unknown ways of knowing either religious or moral matters. It's usually about you. By some unknown scheme, unknown source, they will say things about you that question your morality and your religious faith. And you can sense it when it happens. It may sound even innocent. It may sound questioning. You understand me?
Well, maybe you've covered this already. What we're talking about now is in the position of an exorcist, or could it be? Is it just necessarily to be in the in a marginal relationship with whomever is consumed by this?
It could happen if you're in the room when these are symptoms that can be any time.
So they're discernible without necessarily putting yourself in challenging it.
Yeah.
That's the word.
Yeah.
You can be affected by it. Yeah. Okay.
But the ones that we're going to talk about next won't come up until a challenge occurs. One of the weirdest things is a discernible temperature drop in the room. If you want to get freaked, wait till you experience that.
Like the whistle of an incoming bomb.
Another is an acrid. Is that how you say that word? Acrid.
Acrid. That's a good pronunciation. Acrid.
An acrid stench that is not like. It doesn't just smell like somebody.
Like cabbage.
No. And it doesn't smell like somebody had dumped in their pants. I mean, it's.
I've heard that rotting flesh smells.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I've never smelled. You know, flesh is actually rotting, but it's like no other kind of.
I don't know if that is it either. But anyway.
Demons. It smells like demons.
Demons.
Oh, damn demon.
Demon sweat.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
I mean, let's be honest. This is nervous.
Another thing that happens that it doesn't happen from any other thing is that you can be looking at someone and all of a sudden it's as though someone stretched their face and they had an instant plastic surgery in the face. And there's no lines, no wrinkles. And it happens while you're looking at them.
Aaron keeps looking at me. It's
the spirit of Mary Lane.
Can you read?
I can't wait. I just can't wait. Another thing is facial expressions or patterns that aren't part of the makeup of the face. I mean, it's like a grin that's sideways, or all of a sudden it the appearance of it looks like teeth are being bared, you know, like a dog does when it's furious.
A grimace?
Well, it's worse than a grimace. But anyway, inexplicable facial distortion is another symptom. Another wild one is this what they call possessed gravity, and that they become so incredibly heavy that it's like it's much heavier than the term dead weight. It's like, you know, four men can't lift a 100-pound woman. It defies the law of gravity.
That's kind of like that meditation thing where you go and you can make yourself yeah. through some kind of trance, you know,
right.
an immovable like kung fu. You know.
And the other one is the appearance of levitation.
Why the appearance?
Levitation. And this normally happens at a time when it happens, it will totally destroy you. I mean, you'll... and one that's been popularized in the movies is the is furniture moving, door slamming, wallpaper peeling, tearing of fabric. I mean, you maybe. This happened to me, and I was in this confrontation, and all of a sudden my shirt ripped, but it didn't rip like where the buttons are. It just started ripping like.
What does it mean here when it says that when the unclean spirit had torn him?
I don't know. I mean, that's.
It doesn't look real good.
It doesn't look too good for the
That's
guy.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Ew, that was pretty good.
Now, I'm telling you all this so that you're not freaked. I mean...
You've said five times you're going to be freaked out. You're going to be freaked out.
I can't wait.
Now, I cannot overemphasize the idea that when this the confrontation comes about, that it is the test of faith. It's that you have nothing to lose. Once it begins, it cannot be called off for any reason.
Why is that? What happens to the person? Is it just that the person who's doing the exorcism loses faith in the ability to even, in God's ability to continue it thereafter because for some reason he's broken it off? Or?
In the spirit, there is a victor. And it's like out of time. So I mean, in the spirit, that spirit has won. I mean, so if it's going to be exercised, it has to be by some other vessel.
No. Okay.
You understand?
The spirit has already won.
Well, if you quit.
Okay.
I mean, you can't just decide to.
You don't get a rematch.
What about the time that the disciples tried to cast the demon out and couldn't and got Jesus to come?
That's fine. I mean, it can be another person, but it can't be that person. The disciple couldn't have gone. He couldn't have gone and gotten some quick words from Jesus and went back and done it. It had to.
A good thing Jesus was there.
Yeah. Now as we remember, we talked about the stages, and we'll get into those now more in detail. But the first stage is the presence, the certainty, the feeling of a presence. The second stage is the pretense. The third is the break point, and the voice, and the clash, and then the expulsion. Historians or people that are right about this say that these are the stages in 90% of confrontations.
Would you run that by again?
It's first the presence, then the pretense, the break point, then the voice, then the clash, and then the expulsion. Now, the presence, from the moment that the battle is engaged, there's a peculiar feeling that hangs in the air that has no spatial location. You can't pinpoint it. Everyone in the room feels it. Even a dark Philistine would feel it. Even someone with no discernment would feel it. And it's inexplicable, unlocatable, but it's awe-inspiring. It's a, you know, you can't find it, you can't see it, you can't locate it, but you know it's there. Everyone's aware of it. Everyone feels it. And sometimes it's a singular presence, and sometimes it'll feel like multiple.
Could it be mistaken as a holy presence in any way, just because it's supernatural? Or?
Probably not, because it's... And it's not supernatural, as we've talked about, and this is an important distinction that we'll get into. But you probably won't mistake it, because it's it produces the opposite of joy. It produces, it's like a clawing at some part deep inside you. I mean, it's like...
Well, that thing which says that even Satan is transformed into an
angel
of light, and, you know, but, I mean, it would be... Very elect might be deceived. I mean, he's that. It's that.
But this is.
This is something.
This is something.
This is it. I
can't in my wildest dreams. I've only experienced it 3 or 4 times, but I can't in my wildest dreams believe that anyone would believe that that was God.
Well, this is the point where the the stuff is stripped off. Right. There's no. Clothing itself with some kind of disguise.
No. There's still a disguise. It'll still try to. You'll see.
Yeah, but I mean, the pretense is gone. It's whatever point you get down to, you've somehow.
Pretense isn't gone. Presence is first. Then comes the pretense.
What are you talking about? I thought you were talking about the end.
There's got to be some kind of confrontation before the presence is felt by.
The presence is felt at the beginning of the process.
That's stage one.
The process is that you call together. And you decide, okay, by whatever means we've said it's not, the symptoms are not medical, they're not psychological, there's no natural explanation.
So this is
the battle isn't going.
Yeah, this is a scene where someone has come before you or a group or whatever and said there's a problem here.
Right, and it's been investigated.
Yeah.
And it's been talked through, and it's been openly discussed, even with the one that's possessed.
Right.
And then...
And they'll talk normal.
They'll talk normal, and then the thing will say, okay, we as a body of people, we as the elders, have looked, and we think that it's likely that this person is possessed. Therefore, we'll have to... Something must be done about it, and we'll be in some place that's isolated, some place that's...
Lord willing.
And it'll be done. It'll be done in an order.
Yeah.
It's not done.
It's not just a happenstance.
No.
Oh, here's somebody. Check them out.
Is that what happened with? I mean, you were on the air. When, I mean, this is back when you were like a long time ago. When you were on the air, and people were, a lot of different people were coming in and coming to the station. In fact, weren't they? I mean, is it? Is that where?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's where two of them happened. There was 5 occasions. 3 of them happened elsewhere. They didn't happen in the context that they happened with me alone, which is another whole story. We're talking about now how we would deal with it, or how the historical church has dealt with it. Okay? You don't do too well as a Lone Ranger in this environment. All right. Now, in all these early stages, the spirit will attempt to hide behind the possessed. He will attempt to appear to be one and the same person, and the same personality with the victim. And this is the pretense. The first task, the most important thing that must take place, is the exorcist must break that pretense. You have to force the spirit. Why is that thing? I mean, there's somebody hitting it or something with their foot. Please push it. Please push it away from so that you don't hit it with your foot. It has to reveal itself openly and separate from the possessed before you can go any further. Now, this is where, this is probably the singular most time-consuming portion of this. You have to mock. It's a lot like a hot seat, but it's different. And it has to come to this idea of naming. We have to get to the name.
Just as a comment, it's like the hot seat is directed toward the individual, where the exorcism is directed toward the spirit.
Right.
It's a different entity.
Yeah. It is a different, but there's some similarities.
Yeah, there's some
differences. It's like now, at this stage, the spirit is silent from your ears. All that you hear is the voice and persona of the victim. And it may be, you know, anything you say may be the spirit is using that victim's personality to answer and to discuss and to logic and to argue and to, you understand what I'm saying? There, that he tries to make it appear as the possessed and the spirit are one being. You have to separate that. Now, at this stage, almost always, especially if there's anyone in the room that doesn't know about it, the exorcist will be made to appear as the villain. He's subjecting an innocent person to all kinds of haranguing and terrible vigors. And many times the mannerisms and the countenance of the possessed will try to emphasize that, because of course that's the biggest defense mechanism. Now, it's been known that and sometimes the pretense cannot be shattered for days. I mean, we're not talking sitting down for. It's been known that it can't be shattered for days on end. If the exorcist cannot mock, and it has to come out by mocking. I mean, you have to.
Like what? Like what kind of thing are you talking about?
You have to mock everything that person thinks of as valuable.
Now we're talking about
kind of a possessed type mocking, that somehow the spirit manifests itself after that.
Yeah, once, that's why the scriptures, once it's no longer possible for the possessed to take a stand, then the spirit has to reveal itself. As long as it's possible for the possessed to take a stand to justify himself for any reason, then the spirit is hiding in that pretense. You understand?
No, I'm not going to worry about it. I still don't see what the difference is.
In that sense, it is
a hot seat or a high place identity.
Huh?
In that sense, it's exactly that.
Now, if he can't shatter the pretense, he's lost. And he can never try again to exorcise that person. And that's a biggie. And more than likely, if he loses at that point, the symptomology or the symptoms of the possessed will start denigrating. All of the whatever it was that brought him to the attention of his family or friends will accelerate.
Did it worse, you mean?
Much worse.
More possessed.
More possessed. Now, You learn during this pretense period that you're dealing with something that is at times intensely cunning, supremely intelligent, and other times just plain stupid. I mean, it's like intelligence and cunning and wiliness and all of those things. The thing, I mean, it's hard to remember because it so freaks you out when they say something like, they'll remind you of something that you did when you were 12 years old. The possessed person, while speaking in his own voice, or they'll attack you from a totally different angle, or they'll say something that looks like they're defending themselves or just making a comment, but in truth they're trying to attack the very core of your faith, the very essence of who you think you are, the very essence of the cross. You understand? As they said, sometimes they can remember, they'll call to mind things that happened to you with perfect clarity 20 years ago, and at other times they can't remember what they said 5 minutes ago in the room. So, I mean, it's like you can't give them too much credit or you can't not give them too much. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? It's like...
Part of the battle here is the breaking through. Like, if you're dealing with someone and you're talking to them, then there's all this discernment that must take place to determine.
Yeah, you can never talk. You can never talk to the possessed.
Yeah. Though they're answering.
Oh yeah.
So in this process, the person, the vessel, from the point of view of the exorcist,
right?
Not even there.
Right. You don't even consider him.
It seemed that would be a way to turn
it. Now, this is where things get weird, from your standpoint. Because they will reveal in many, many, many instances the most intimate and secret details of your life. Sometimes they'll just bring them to your mind to be in contrast to what you have just said. Other times it'll be announced publicly. The most disgusting fantasy you've ever had, the most horrible thing you've ever done, will all be poured out for all to hear.
But doesn't that remove the pretense? I mean, at that point, it seemed a little bit clear who you're dealing with.
So it's clear before you ever began, if you ever started it.
Well, I'm just saying that I hadn't detected the change from pretense to presence, and yet that would seem to indicate...
No, tip off that this thing is some kind
presence is first, pretense is second.
Oh, excuse me.
And the point is that the entity has to drop the pretense. It's right. Not that you believe it.
You don't, yeah. You always know there's, but the being has to identify himself. That's what this whole game is about.
That's when you start.
But this is like Tom said, this is the first tip off that he's broken through just the personality when he starts calling up your past.
Right. When he starts using...
No longer doubt you made a mistake at that point.
When he starts using talents that would not normally be available, then, I mean, it's just like you've made progress.
Yeah.
Now, the biggest thing that must take place at this point, and you must always remember this, two things. And it might be a hint for your normal walk. Number one is you must never justify yourself. Never, 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 never justify yourself. The instant you justify yourself, you will feel a knife go in your heart. You will feel a claw go to your throat. Now, sometimes you can get out of it by internally asking for forgiveness. But you can never justify yourself to that demon spirit. Now, that's why, one of the reasons I've been so, what you thought was cruel to you, to cause you to never justify yourselves. Because if you justify yourself to me, you're going to justify yourself in that arena. Second thing you can never do is argue with them. You can never get into, don't ever get into a discussion about the merits of doctrine or the merits of, you understand?
Never argue with demons about doctrine.
That's right.
It's definitely non-negotiable.
You must have a singular goal, and nothing can detract you from it, and that is to free that possessed person. You cannot even consider your own faith, your own anything. Now you can see why God has demons. Now, as it must at all costs avoid trading abuses on the in the natural sense. You know, well, your mother wears combat boots, you know.
That's real slippery. How do you mock?
Well, you don't mock by abusing them. You mock by showing how stupid they are, how insignificant they are, how they've been locked forever into the pit, how they're really dead and of no value, and they're really just little ghosts, air ghosts, running around trying to get attention, that they have no purpose in life, that you're just jokes.
I interpreted that we were mocking the individual.
No. You don't even talk to the individual. Once you've gone to this process, you no longer talk to the individual. You see through the individual.
This is going to be difficult. So you don't use words like asshole.
Both.
That's
what. Yeah. You, whatever it is that is your weakest point.
Well, you said that we mock everything that person holds valuable, like a hot seat. First, is that like an initial kind of thing? But once you get into the actually talking to the spirit,
right,
then you don't do that.
Right.
Okay.
You understand? We're this is supposed to be a progression.
You don't let the thing take a stand through the person at all.
Now, tempted to go around the room and...
Well, what are you doing?
Once you've done the mockery, the thing has revealed itself.
You haven't gotten there yet. It hasn't revealed itself yet.
Around the room
and what? You mock them and...
Try to cause you to get into a... logic, or justify yourself, or...
Well, that shouldn't take much time. We'll just skip that and consider it play a comedy.
You mock them with what you know about their true state, which is they've already been defeated, the whole thing's over with, they're stupid, they're just, you know, the judgment day is now, as far as we're concerned.
You mock them with everything about them that isn't the cross. Now, in order to mock them about everything that isn't the cross, you have to see yourself as the chief of sinners. That there is no charge that can be made against you that you're not guilty of. Understand me? This clarifies all kinds of stuff real quickly. There's no gray in this confrontation. You must know that Jesus Christ manifest in the flesh and justified in the spirit is your only shield. not even Jesus Christ justified in the flesh. You can't ever fall into that trap. That's why Paul said, the love of Christ constraineth us, for we thus judge. But if one died for all, then we're all dead. We no longer know anyone after the flesh. Yea, that we have known Christ after the flesh, now we know even him no more after the flesh. You cannot, in this level, ever justify your faith based on Jesus Christ after the flesh. You will get killed. Now, this is something most of you know nothing about thus far.
How would you do that?
By bringing any kind of spiritual phenomena to flesh. I mean, to justify the behavior of flesh. Or, in your mind, feel that you should be different than you are because you're a Christian. You understand? That's the one that will cut your balls off. If you think you should be different than you are because you are either believing or trying to believe in God, then you are trying to justify yourself in the flesh. And you will get oozied.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to show you that you're disqualified.
You right, no, you're disqualified. And they'll go down the whole arena.
Yeah.
And they know you better than you know yourself.
And unless you know that all, there's nothing in you that is qualified by any stand that you're taking, then you'll agree with them.
Right. And it's this thing about knowing Jesus Christ after the flesh is really important for those of you that are religious. Because if what that means internally to you is the way it manifests that you want to know Jesus Christ after the flesh is that you believe that you should be different than you are. Period. All that means to God and to the demons is that you want to know Jesus Christ after the flesh. And that's like kindergarten. And if you're in kindergarten, you have no business doing high priest stuff. I mean, this may not affect your salvation, but it'll sure make you a little worried about where you are in the walk. Mm-hmm.
The truth is that the flesh is in the same condition as the demon.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's supposed to be in that
condition. Yeah.
What did you say? Flesh is in the same condition as what?
The demon.
The demon.
Flesh and blood shall not inherit the kingdom.
Ridiculous.
It's already been judged.
Like the neutralizer. I mean, that takes the charge off of him altogether.
Yeah, but if you could only see that now, then you could have the freedom of that confrontation now without...
Yeah, it may not mean something to some people, but if you think that to be a believer...
You're supposed to act
be able
a certain
to lay,
way.
Well, lay hands and people have been healed, speak in tongues and they're validated. Any kind of those things that in your mind say... Or real validation.
Oh, well, yeah,
or
but
fulfill the law, or
anything, or you know, if you don't masturbate, or you don't smoke, or you know, you shouldn't be fat, or there's anything that you believe that you should get right, then you're justified in the flesh. You're trying to be justified in the flesh. You understand me? Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. As this pretense is breaking down by, and it's interesting, it breaks down by you causing him to use his powers. You understand? Mm-hmm.
You get further past this pretense.
Right. And so as the pretense breaks down, the possessed usually increases in violence and in repulsiveness. I mean, it's like a giant cesspool has been opened up right in front of you. And so this intensity of these things, the frenzy increases. You know, out of it pours the streams of filth and abuse and, you know, they'll start talking about everything, as I said before and hinted at. I keep pointing it out because it happened to me so often. Memories that you had that where you've hustled yourself or you've lied to yourself and just heaps of bullshit get poured on them. You know, all of the little, you know, pleasant, idyllic memories that you have of life, they're all bullshit. And this spirit knows how to make you know they were until you feel so totally unworthy, totally worthless, that unless Jesus Christ is your life, I mean, you can die from just a broken heart, from sorrow, from the pain of the realization of your own pretense. You understand?
Wow.
Yeah, when you said that, I got the strangest feeling that an exorcism is a little like standing in front of the mirror.
Depends on who's standing in front of the mirror.
Yeah.
Okay, now, I hate to tell you about this, but physical violence begins, could begin.
Physical violence?
Physical violence.
Isn't that illegal?
Against you.
We're not talking projectile vomiting, are we?
Does that mean it's good to have other people around?
It's good to have other people around.
Head or somebody like that?
Four large people should be around.
Are you serious? You're not serious. You're serious.
I'm serious.
Four large people should be around.
Include the Dallas Cowboys.
Now, the gnashing of teeth in the Bible, that there shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Well, you'll see gnashing of teeth. You'll finally find out what gnashing of teeth means. Yeah. You'll also find out what it means to have your body scratched with nobody there to scratch it. You'll see blood, and just like somebody took and scratched you. That happened to me.
Does this person get restrained? Do you start off this whole exercise by... I brought a couple of my friends over to talk to you. By the way, sit down. We're going to tie you up.
Can't feed in concrete or something?
Now, as the break point nears, the biggest thing, the worst thing possible takes place to you, the exorcist. It's the most terrible of all of the sufferings that you can imagine. And that is that you're overcome with total confusion. It's like a cloud, some evil thing overtook your mind, and there'll be a moment in which there's absolutely no clarity. It's as though you smell with your fingers, and I mean, nothing is clear. It's like all of the sensory organs in your system get confused. You taste with your feet, you smell with your hands, you chew with your eyebrows. I mean, you have no coordination in terms of what does what to whom. The confusion is dreadful and complete. It's the only way I can explain it is the experiences that happened to me when I was in such pain, where I lost the capacity to complete a thought in my mind. And it's like the last vestige of clarity of the mind breaks down. And the only thing that can take place within you is there's some component within you that knows faith. Otherwise, you will run screaming from the room. And I tell you, that's very tempting to do it when that happens.
You're talking in a one-on-one situation, but what we're talking about here is more than one person.
And what happens when there's more than one is the panic will overcome everyone in the room. But it'll be most severe upon the one, the exorcist, in whom the attention is. But it's panic and total fear will overcome you, and it will overcome everyone in the room. You'll think you've gone crazy. It's like insanity upon insanity. and it's the last and greatest suffering before the breakpoint, and I guarantee you it'll happen.
What is the relationship between the exorcist and the attendants?
Normally it should be, there should be at least one person from the possessed family. If the victim is a female, there should be at least two other friends of the exorcist that are female and two that are male, just for quote-unquote decency's purpose. I mean, you can't believe what happened with a female if you're a male. You will not believe it. Now, you must ride out this storm. You are in that boat and the storm is raging, and you must know only that Jesus Christ will calm the storm. No trick of doctrine, no gimmicks of prayer, nothing can help you except that you must at the core know God is faithful. Now, none of you should ever attempt an exorcism without having first been there as an assistant when it was being done. I had the misfortune of getting thrown into it without even anybody there.
This literally is kids, don't try this at home.
Yeah. Everybody understand?
Yeah, that last thing was like the description of porn. Everything
that's description of what?
Torn. That's everything's torn away. There's nothing to hold on to.
It's stark terror. And I don't care how strong in the faith you are, it'll overcome you. The only thing, there'll be a component deep within you that says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. Now, when the break point is reached, when pretense is finally totally collapsed, the voice of the victim is no longer used by the spirit. There'll be a strange new voice that enters into the equation, and it may or may not issue from the mouth of the possessed. It can come from anywhere. Now, at the break point, the spirit speaks of the possessed in the third person, as though that person that's possessed is a totally separate being. And when that happens, then you know you've reached the break point.
That's why knowledge of grammar is important.
I can't believe he said that. I do not believe he said that.
He thinks it's a year till his next one.
Now, what happens from now on? What?
She just told me what it was.
What?
He just now got it.
That's even funny.
Now the possessing spirit acts personally and speaks of I or we interchangeably, but the we doesn't include the possessed person. If the possessed person is he or she, and the spirit speaks as I or we or us or mine or... And I'm not an expert in this, but the voice of the spirit is unhuman, and it has an echo quality. It isn't the movie version. It's almost an echo or a reverb thing, and it's almost mechanical. Now, at this point, you've succeeded
in removing the pretense, and the break point has been so we're at the stage of voice, which is the stage you've been trying to get to all this time. But now, in order to proceed further, the voice must be silenced. So it's like you can't let that voice manifest itself for very long.
Is this the point at which Jesus instantaneously went to? And, you know, because it's like they start saying, were they saying in that voice, Jesus of Nazareth, we know who you are, and blah, blah, blah. And
right.
Then he just said, get out.
Yeah. Now, the only thing that I don't know, and I don't know whether it was ever in the scriptures or that was excised from them and later versions, but we don't know how much of this process that Jesus really went through, other than it may have just been instantaneous, you know, or the disciples went through.
So it's not to say that that might not happen if we encountered it.
It might, but it has to take place. I mean, it has to. This process may only take 30 seconds. Now, you must not pay attention to the words. If you thought the words earlier were the person speaking in a regular voice and saying all this weird stuff about you bothered you, this will bother you down to the marrow. This will cause your marrow to shiver. And so the voice must be stopped. You must not discuss with it. You must not argue with it at this point. You must not pay any attention to the words that are being spoken. You have to command the voice to silence in the name of Jesus of Nazareth, and then to identify itself. Okay?
So you take charge.
You take charge. You command. This is where spiritual authority really manifests itself. Now, normal, huh?
I was just thinking about the fact that in Jesus' day there may not have been the ability to have as much pretense as there is now.
Right.
Because there was not enough personal self kind of stuff.
Yeah, there was no preaching of the isolated self in any of them.
Everybody just kind of had all their stuff out there. They were worshiping real idols and, you know,
right,
all kinds of weird stuff.
So. That's a good point. Yeah.
Whatever was inside them manifested itself
openly.
And so
people weren't as skilled in the art of pretense, so there was no...
Why weren't these people stoned?
Hmm?
Why weren't these people stoned if it was obvious they were possessed by...
It was against the law.
I mean, they possessed somebody that, defiled themselves. Or, I mean, there were reasons for stoning murder. I mean, it was sacrilege, and they crucified Christ for being a blasphemer. Why didn't they stone?
Well, they probably did.
They had lax enforcement at times.
Now, once, at the command, the voice usually stops. In the name of Jesus, be silent. The voice stops. Now, and you think, ha-ha! Remember what I said a little bit ago about this confusion and fear? Well, now it's replaced by a sense of imminent doom. And it's a cloud, another cloud hits you. And it's a cloud of foreboding, of you think you've succeeded because your mind obviously goes, it's all of the test coming. You think you've succeeded, and so you take pride in it. And the instant that takes place, then there's this tremendous sense of foreboding, and you become convinced that that being is controlling you. You understand? There's a doom, a foreboding that just comes over the exorcist. And this doom or foreboding is like, it's like, have you ever been in London or in a real big cloud bank, and you start to see and feel the edge of the cloud, or you know, and it's pretty soon you get obscured real quickly. Well, what you're doing at this point, it's this clash. You're clashing with the edge of the kingdom of darkness. And that's why it's called the clash. It's a direct and it's a personal collision with the Spirit calls the will of the kingdom. Yeah. And this happens, I mean, this isn't like steps 1, 2, 3. I mean, this is like you've commanded the voice to silence, and then you have instant success. Then, oh shit, what have I done? This thing, I thought that I'm in control of this thing's in control of me.
What do you mean? Why would you think that?
Because it's fucking with your mind in such a way that you can't believe possible.
When as soon as it goes silent, then you begin to think of stuff.
Yeah.
Things go through your head.
And you have a sense that it isn't just this one-to-one thing. It's like you're somehow in a clash with eternity itself, and things. It'll go through your mind that, oh my God, am I fighting against God Himself, or what right do I have to be doing this, or this person's going to die and it's my responsibility. I mean, it's everything comes at you.
This is just after you've taken charge.
You think you've taken charge.
Yeah.
It's because it obeys you. I mean, then it's like a confirmation that, hey, all this stuff is really real.
Right.
You know, it's like this stuff really happens. So it's a bigger deal than maybe you've been thinking about.
Yeah.
And it's kind of become so big, it freaks you out.
Now then, at this point, you've got to ride that out so that you know that that spirit has to identify themselves. And they'll try every trickery, you know. You'll hear all these weird names. They sound like Mesopotamia or Sumerian names or something. But you just have to keep pressing and pressing. And at the name of Jesus, is that all? I mean, you can't just, if someone says, oh, I'm the demon of smoking, you know. You know they've been listening to Robert Tilton.
My name is Liggett Morris.
Yeah, my name is Liggett. But you keep pushing and pushing and pushing until the one that's in authority over that hierarchy has been identified. You understand?
And you'll know that by how?
Because it has to respond. You can't be satisfied with the first answer. In the name of Jesus, you must. I command you. Now, I won't get into it tonight because it's too wild, but there's a real reason why you have to cause them to name themselves, because the name, and you have to make sure that they're all named.
In other words, you got to work your way up through the hierarchy.
Or down.
Down.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily.
Who all's there? Is everybody accounted for?
Is everybody accounted for? Is anybody hiding? I mean, it sounds silly, but that's what has to be done.
And they can't run a con on you this time.
Let me borrow your pen a minute. So that's where we are at the point of calling for its identification. Okay? Any questions, comments? What are you thinking? Why is that weird look on your face?
It's so
out of like brain
surgery.
Okay?
Okay.
Take a big guy.